sure you want to get cute with me. You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come to us and take it.
One shot at a time, just like Gonzales. We're keeping our guns.
Join that sexy thing for living way out here on the Survival Circle Network. Yep, Amy's back on weeknights except Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time with an hour of trivia, fun, and interesting stories. Join her for Living Way Out Here.
There's been a lot of talk lately about gun bans, naturally, in the wake of what happened in Connecticut last week. And like every other American, my heart goes out to the families who have had to experience this tragedy so close to Christmas. And I'm not one of those people who admonishes any American for bringing up the issue of gun bans and the Second Amendment in the wake of a tragedy like this. I think it's natural and normal. And I think it is an opportunity to discuss this issue openly. I wanted to have my two cents as someone who was formerly anti-gun and formerly anti-Second Amendment. Yes, not anymore, but I used to be. And one of the things I used to say, and I hear a lot of people saying about modern weaponry is, look, you don't need an assault rifle or a machine gun to take down a bear or a lion or whatever you're taking down in modern America. And that's true, but it's also a mistake to believe that the Second Amendment was made for hunters. It has nothing to do with hunting at all, and this was one of the things that surprised me when I started researching the Second Amendment. It has absolutely nothing to do with hunting. It has to do with freedom and what the ability to brandish a weapon means to your freedom. Because your freedom needs to be protected. And how do you protect freedom? Well, let's just think about the last group of people in this country who are forbidden from owning guns. That would be black people. Why? Because we were slaves. And what would happen if you gave a slave a gun? Well, they would no longer be a slave, right? Because a gun is one of the most powerful weapons in any revolution. Our founding fathers knew that, and that's why they enshrined it in our Constitution. They were revolutionaries. And they wanted the people to have the freedom to rise up against any oppressive government, just like they did with theirs. It's what keeps a society free, because when a government knows that its citizens can rise up against it, well, they're a little less inclined to enslave its population. It's why every dictator in modern history has begun with a gun ban in their country under the auspices of protection and safety. But what it did was disarm the citizenry. Do we have a government that we need to revolt against right now, physically speaking? Well, no. But that doesn't mean we never will. That doesn't mean some of us won't ever be enslaved again. I hear Democrats talk all the time about specific conservatives or Republicans. If they get into office, they'll send us back to Jim Crow. They want to put you all back in chains. Well, if you don't want that to happen, then don't support a gun ban. You can ban guns, but you can never ban evil. The best we can do is to tell our children, I will do everything in my power to protect you from evil, even if it means blowing its head off when it walks through the door.
Now, war is coming between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
But you can find it right here on the Shooting Bench, coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall.
You need the Shooting Bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
And now, if you think you're ready, the Shooting Bench. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 26th of February and it's a Thursday. Ordinarily, this is our all gun-related night, but we have something much more important to discuss tonight. We'll have a special guest coming up here in just a few minutes. And good to see some newcomers in there. We've got Kit. Well, she's not a newcomer, but she doesn't make it in too often. But I'm glad you made it. Kangaroo Joey, there's a new one. And Sue. And, well, there's several of them, actually, huh? Anyway, without going through the whole list, Roger, good to see you in here. T.G. Voss, thank you very much. You know what I'm talking about. We've got several anonymous. All right, good deal. Well, yesterday was an exciting day in Washington State, and we talked about it a good bit last night, but we're going to hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, here in just a little while. Before that, I want to remind everybody that may be interested in taking the Battlefield Medic class that's coming up this weekend. If you're in any of the in the Southwest somewhere, actually, this class is worth making quite a trip for. Matter of fact, Iowa Cats Irish come down here. Oh, it was last summer sometime, come all the way out here from Iowa to take the class. We've had one come from California, Casper Mountain, come take the class. And I don't remember, we had, didn't we have that guy from Illinois?
The guy from Illinois.
Yeah, so just because, don't say you live too far away. This is a great class. There you go. Yeah. Edge of the Woods is here with me, by the way, so if you guys have any questions or anything, well, feel free. spamming. Oh, okay, I got it. All right, in about 5 minutes, Tampico Scout's going to call in. Actually, well, no, Tampico Scout, if you're listening, just go ahead and call in. We're ready for you. We've got everything out of the way here. So, C7, this is none other than Miss Amy's producer. Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there. So, while we're waiting for Tampico Scout, We're going to go on with a couple of other things here while we're talking to him, because there's a correlation, I think, between a number of things that's going on. We talked about the Homeland Security calling all of us right-wingers terrorists, domestic terrorists being more dangerous than ISIS, according to some of them. The banning of certain types of ammo, the attempted banning of body armor and night vision items. All of this stuff coming up here is could all be related. I think Tampico Scott's in the process of calling in here, so let's stand by here just a second. We'll see. I hope I gave him the right number a while ago. Pretty sure I did. I guess we'll find out in a minute when he gets on the chat and says, hey, can't get in there. They'll know I screwed it up. DeTinker, he managed, I don't know if Chris let him out or if he just snuck out. He called a while ago and said, oh, by the way, and I could hear a bunch of hollering on the other end, so I don't know what happened exactly there. All right, we may have right now. Let's see if this works right. All right, Tampico Scout, we got you there?
You do.
Actually, we're just going to tell everybody who you are. This is Anthony Bosworth. I'm sure you don't mind us telling that, because he is an internet sensation right now. He's all over the internet, and for good reason. Tampico Scout, or Anthony, was the one of few out there that is willing to risk literally life, limb, and literally his own personal freedom to fight the good fight. And we're proud of you, Anthony. We've gotten a lot of mileage out of this so far.
And it's still going strong, too.
I'll bet it is, and it will be for a while. There's no doubt about it. So why don't you just take the time here and let everybody know what went on here in your own words, not off of the internet or anything. Let's hear it from you. And if we need to bust in and interrupt you, we just will.
Okay. That sounds good to me. Let me take it back to the beginning there. A couple days before this rally happened, I got a phone call from a 10th Amendment group, because we've been trying to get the groups to work together, the constitutional groups working together, so we get bigger crowds and more push. And so they contacted us and wanted to know if we, as a Second Amendment group, would come out and support a 10th Amendment group. And what it was over is, here in Washington State, we have a federal case going on that is a clear violation to the 10th Amendment. In Washington State, we all know, we don't have to agree with it, but we all know that marijuana is legal. And so there were these five people that were arrested. They're being called the infamous Kettle Falls Five. And they were busted for growing marijuana in a state where it's actually legal. Well, while they were being busted, the FBI found a muzzle loader in one of their homes. And the FBI is using that as proof in their statement that is proof that these five people were drug runners, because they had a black powder muzzle loader.
I tell you what, every drug runner around here has assault muzzle loaders in their Amish style wagon that they smuggle drugs with. So probably for good reason, I guess.
Exactly. So basically, yeah, Cope, what ended up happening there is, now we've got the federal government coming into the state of Washington, arresting and prosecuting Washingtonians for something that is legal in Washington. And so the 10th Amendment group got involved, because it's a 10th Amendment issue, and we joined them. We showed up the next day, a little bit early, so we could meet with their leadership outside the federal building. Outside our federal building over there in Spokane, which is to the east side of our state, there's this great big public plaza out front that is clearly built for the public. There's no fences, there's no barriers, and there's probably 30 different seating benches out front there in this great big courtyard. we proceed up there and start talking to the leadership. And we had been on site probably 10, 15 minutes talking to the leadership, talking to security guards. And then we had some, we had some Homeland Security agents show up. One was acting fairly aggressive, real big guy. In the video, he's the guy off to my right. I calmed him down real quick, and we just openly engage in conversation. He brings up that I'm violating federal law because I'm on federal grounds with a firearm. He quotes the law, and he misquotes it, and I correct him in his verbiage that the law says in the facility, not on grounds. He told me I wasn't protesting, that I was breaking the law. And we start discussing, well, where's the difference between the state and federal ground? You know, where's the border? And although I knew I was in the right, I was going to comply just so I didn't take over these other people's rally. And in the discussion, we're talking about the border there, and he kept saying over to the sidewalk, well, we're standing on sidewalks. And up come a third party. I only seen three at the time because of the way I was facing. I had no clue that there was a whole army of them behind me because I hadn't turned around yet.
I think there was eight of them all together, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that what it was?
I think so, yeah.
And so a guy in unmarked clothing, civilian attire, approached, and he was being pretty aggressive, verbally aggressive, and started barking orders, but there was a definite disconnect between Homeland Security people and this guy. The Homeland Security was basically ignoring him. I had no idea who he was, so I went back to my conversation with Homeland Security, because they weren't listening to him, so I didn't think I had to either. And he kept interjecting, and he approached me to the left side. By then, I had noticed that he had some equipment underneath his shirt, so it looked kind of like he might be some kind of law enforcement. And so he went to move my hand, and I thought he was just looking at my sidearm, because I was packing my Glock. Man, I miss that Glock. And I had my AK on my back. And in a safe manner. The AK did have a 10-round mag in it. It was empty. My Glock was loaded, of course. And so he moved my hand, and I assumed he was going to look at my Glock. And so I willingly moved my hand for him, and then that's when he grabbed my hand and started twisting it behind my back and telling me that I was under arrest. I was shocked. It was all peaceful. I wasn't expecting it. And so they ended up cuffing me, and in the video that my wife posted, you'll see me jerk my hand from me. Well, people need to pay attention to what I say when I did that. He actually smashed a cigarette that I had between his hand and my hand, and I was trying to protect him. I said, hey, you're going to burn yourself. And so he forced me to pull my hand away from me to get the cigarette out between our hands. And then he keeps saying that I was resisting and twisting my hand behind my back. Well, then him and the Homeland Security guy get in an argument behind me while they're cuffing me. The Homeland Security guy's wanting me, and if I'm being too detailed, just go ahead and tell me, Cope, and I'll quit being so detailed
here. No, take your time. That's all right. That's why we're here. Anthony, feel free.
And so he's wanting to take, the Homeland Security guy is wanting to take my AK off my back, and he's got to slip the sling over my head and over that arm that this other guy's got. And so they're arguing about let go of his hand so I can take this off. And so I'm trying to comply with the Homeland Security guy that's actually taken the weapon from me. And this other guy won't let go of my hand. And I keep telling him, hey, dude, just calm down a little bit because he's really cranking on my wrist. And he wasn't breaking it or nothing, but, he was really cranking on it. And I told him, just calm down. I'm not resisting. I'm just trying to move my hand so this guy can get the rifle off me. Well, they proceed to argue back and forth. And, this literally went on for probably a minute of the two of them fighting with each other, and I'm kind of a toy between them as they're jerking me around here. And, I'm trying to comply with them. I'm being very peaceful, very quiet, this is the funny part. I spent most of the time trying to keep them calm. And, finally, what they ended up doing is they ended up throwing me in a cuff anyway. And then they just took the sling apart because they couldn't settle it between the two of them. And they got me in cuffs. And then one of the Homeland Security guys goes after Marie. and they're cranking her arm behind her back as she's filming. And then, thankfully, the big guy that had a hold of me to start with, he apparently was one of the superiors or something, because he told the guy to leave her alone. She had kids. And
that was nice.
So they backed her off onto the sidewalk. Yeah. It was very apparent they were after me. I mean, it wasn't that I just happened to be the one there that they were going to arrest. They come there for me. I mean, it was very apparent. There was other people there armed. And I was the only one that they harassed or arrested. They did ask Marie to leave the lot because she was filming, since she was so close, but there was other armed people standing at a little bit different distances away, and they never approached them. So then they go to take me to the building, and I ask them, am I under arrest? They confirmed that, yes, you are under arrest. Keep in mind, they did not read me my Miranda rights at that point. And then I asked for my attorney. They ignored me. And the little sawed-off guy, the in civilian clothes,
mm-hmm.
he was actually behind me, twisted in one handcuff, and he was trying to, he's deliberately trying to put me in pain. And I'm walking, I mean, you've seen the video, I'm walking along nonchalantly, I'm not resisting in any way, and he's deliberately trying to get me to react. And when he couldn't get me to react by what he was saying quietly in my ear, he started twisting on the handcuff, trying to get me to pull away from him, and I knew what he was doing. And I told him, there's no need for it, I'm not resisting. They get me in the building out of the way of the cameras, and then he really gets aggressive with it, trying to crank on it, and he keeps bumping into my bad leg. And telling me I'm resisting, and I told him, I'm not resisting, I just got, you know, my legs, I have an injured leg, and I'm walking in such a way to protect it because you keep bumping me in that leg. And we get to a first door, and he slams me face first into the wall. There was no need for it. I knew what he was wanting me to do. He wanted me to face the wall so he could let go of me so he could open the door. But instead of just facing me toward the wall, he'd actually plant my face into the wall from behind, you know, by pushing me. And this went up every door, every elevator, clear to the fourth floor. They get me to the fourth floor. They drop their weapons because it's a pretty secure facility up there and everything. It's some kind of lockup up there. And then they take me down this hallway, and they put me in this 13-foot by 13-foot room. I paced the room. I know the dimensions. And so they take me in this room, and inside this room is a steel cage, like a chain-link cage made of stainless steel. And then they put me in this cage inside this room. And they take my jacket, they take my belt, and they lay it outside the cell there, the cage there, to mess with me. And I know this is kind of long and entailed here, but they start constantly messing with me. They made me wait 4 hours for a roll of toilet paper. Then the FBI come in. They wanted to know, you know, about the movement. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about, a movement. And then they specifically asked, well, you know, all the Second Amendment people in Washington State standing up and causing all this ruckus. You know, we know you're a leader. So what's going on? When are you guys going to get violent? You guys are seeming to stay peaceful now, but we want to know when that's changing. And they balance back and forth, being real friendly. And then
now, is it just me, or was that a stupid statement?
That seemed
just absolutely childish, ignorant to me.
I'll just hand deliver.
Yeah. Oh well, go ahead. That just sounded dumb.
It just.
Oh, it gets crazier, Cope. Then I ask him again, hey, what about my attorney? And the guy laughs at me. It's the short little sawed-off federal marshal there. The guy in plain clothes ended up being a federal marshal. He laughs at me, and he goes, this is a federal facility. You don't get an attorney. And then he turns around and he goes, that's Hollywood. He goes, I don't know what you're thinking. And they leave. And I'm there for probably an hour to 2 hours. There's no clock in there, so there's no way for me to tell the time. And then the FBI and another law enforcement officer that claimed to be local police come in with the FBI agent there. And then that's when they started questioning me about, you know, well, they first started off as, by the way, and I love how they do this, by the way, we just want you to know that your family's still outside and they're safe. We know two of your kids are there, and we know the rest of your kids are at home.
Well, Dick Tracy, so does everybody else, man. Like there's
exactly.
some big degree of law enforcement deduction there of some kind?
Well, it's more, and he kept saying it in different ways, and it's more like he's trying to tell me that they know where my family's at. It's almost like a threat.
Uh-huh.
But they're saying it real nicely. And then, as I said before, they set my jacket outside the cell there, and anybody that knows that has ever interrogated prisoners or seen it done, they do stuff with a mess with your mind. And I've seen that one done before while I was in Iraq when I had dealt with some CIA guys over there interrogating some of my prisoners. And they'll set it out there so you constantly understand that your materials are outside the cage, but you're in it. So even if you block out that you're in the cage, your mind will subconsciously pick up that your stuff is outside of a cage. That must mean you're in it. And then that didn't work because I just laid down and acted like I was going to sleep after they left. And, of course, they're watching me on the three different cameras that are in there. And then they come in a little later and put my belt there. And they just left. They come in a little bit while later, and I asked them, hey, can you pick up my jacket? You're just walking on it. And they said, oh, we don't do that kind of stuff. And left. They come back in again with a lunch. And keep in mind that it was a one of those Lunchable meals that you see advertised for kids' lunch to send to school, that kind of thing. The thing was outdated. I'm looking at it, and it's got an outdated date. No big deal, but I just found it ironic that they're feeding people outdated food. Then they leave, and they come back in with my driver's license. And in no stretch of the imagination, what need would they have to come in there and lay my driver's license on top of my coat on the floor and then walk out? So that just kind of showed you, my wife just came in the room and told me to slow down.
You know, that's good. That's good information, though, because I, you know, there's a chance that, you know, other people listening to this show or might listen later could possibly be involved in something like this. So it's damn sure good information, Horn.
Well, Cope, I'm telling you, you know, with my years in the military and different things I did, I've had exposure to a lot of this. The whole time I was in that cell, I said, I'm glad it's me instead of somebody that doesn't understand what's kind of happening. I was really thankful that for this instance that it was somebody that understood what was going on, because it could have been a real mess if it wouldn't have been. And so the whole tempo, you know, they bring up Mike Vanderbilt, my son, out on the street had a 3%er hat on. So the FBI agent brings up the fact that, hey, your son's got a nice hat. And I said, yeah, it was given to him by a friend. And he goes, yeah, we know who Mike Vanderbilt is. So there's another key thing that they're telling me. Of course, I don't go into how I know Mike or anything like that. But it was funny that they're probing back and forth. And then the whole time that we're talking, they're wanting to know who's in the movement, what's the intention of the movement, you know, what's our future plans. They want to understand. They keep playing, you know, this nice guy of how they just want to understand why Americans are doing what they're doing. Very deceitful type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They give me both, the agent gives me a name, and that'll come into play later here. Remind me about the agent's name because I'll probably forget. But, excuse me. And so it comes on, you know, I have no idea about what time it is and everything. Well, and I'm going to use times because I come aware of the time period after I got out. About an hour to an hour and a half before I was released out of the cell, their tempo changed. Their whole demeanor changed. I mean, they're still probing, but they become a lot softer in what they're doing, a lot more careful with what they were saying and doing. But they were definitely still probing, but something seemed to hold them back a little bit. They take me out in this area to out process, and they tell me, this federal marshal tells me, he goes, you know, well, let me back up because I actually skipped the first time he told me that. About 3 hours into it, the federal marshal comes in, and he tells me, you know, just some friendly advice, if you quit and be quiet and just go away for a year, all these federal charges in this prison time will probably just go away.
Probably.
If you just quit and everything. And so they're basically trying to get me to admit that I'm a part of some movement that they're fantasizing about, and then that I promise to go away and, you know, I'll make a deal with them and they'll just drop the charges. And which I just let go. And then when they were releasing me, we're going to jump ahead about 3 hours now, in this foyer, they say to me for the third time, and by then I have all my belongings back. I signed my pieces of paper, and I'm getting ready to head out the door, and this federal marshal stops me again, and he goes, just remember, friendly advice, if you just quit and be good, this will all go away. And you know me, Cope. I turn and look at him, and in the best manner I could without looking arrogant when I said it, I turn at him and I said, boys, let me tell you something. I'm just getting started. And I walk out the door. And then they follow me down the hallway, and they put me in this secure elevator, and they had a young marshal come in there, big, big guy. I think he's about your size, Cope. And this little tiny federal marshal. And I'm standing there, but now I don't have to face the wall because I'm a free man. I'm not cuffed or anything. Well, this young marshal come in, and he barks order at me, face the wall. And I look over at this older marshal, and I said, training a rookie, are you? And the marshal got really upset. The young guy, he got really upset. And the old guy started laughing. It was pretty funny. If that young marshal could have got a hold of me, he'd have strangled me to death. He was so mad. He was purple. And so, you know, we got to have some humor in it when we're doing it. And so I go outside, down the stairs and everything, the elevator, and go outside. Well, then I find out why their temple changed. And from my understanding, that the local sheriff, which by all means is not a constitutional sheriff in any stretch of the word, so I was surprised to learn this, had showed up and told him, you will release Bosworth. And I thought, huh, that's kind of odd. I mean, because frankly, he's a coward. I know because I've had dealings with him before. And then I hear that a local militia had gotten involved, good or bad or indifferent. They went to the sheriff, and they told the sheriff, you will go down there and you will free this man, or we're going to show up with 250 armed militiamen, and we'll do your job for you. That's what we're telling you. So he showed up. And so that was kind of exciting.
Enlightening, yeah.
Encouraging, yeah.
I guess is the word.
So, exactly. Let me shut this other phone off here. I'm sorry about that. What they ended up getting me with is a citation for failure to comply. Failure to comply with what? I don't know yet. I've got a court date pending. They told me that they were keeping my sidearms, or both of my arms, in case they have a felony charge that they can find. And this is their word, that the reason they were keeping my my arms was because the state attorney's office didn't know what to do. They were in a gray area. They didn't know if they had legal cause to hold me or hold my weapons, but they were holding for in reserve the federal charges in case they can find something. Those were the words of the state attorney's office. And since I might have, in their stretch of imagination, somewhere committed a felony or a federal charge, they were holding my weapons so they would have them in their custody if they so chose to charge me. Some real weird verbiage there, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's very, very ingenious of them there to figure that out.
Exactly. And basically that's, and then the federal marshal, the FBI agent that I spoke to inside come out of nowhere after I was outside on the street and approached me, and he was really nice now, and he gave me a different name than what he had before. And told me he wanted to meet with me privately in my home back in Yakima to discuss the Second Amendment, because apparently I know more about it than he does, and he knows very little about the Second Amendment. That's what he said. And it's like,
believable.
No, I don't think I'm going to meet with you privately. And he gave me his name and his number and asked for mine, and I declined. I said, no, if I need to talk to you, I'll call you. And the conversation went a little bit more on the Second Amendment. And he asked for my number and everything again, which I declined again. And he told me, well, he really wants to sit down and talk to me about the Second Amendment because I'm so knowledgeable in it. And it's like, come on, guy, you got to understand that I see right through this. and so, buddy, let me say something, Cope. My wife and Kit, they were on it. No sooner than I walked through the door, my wife was contacting Kit. They contacted state representatives.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me, man. I was watching it from the beginning, and they, man, they got all over it like skinny on a toothpick, son. They were Johnny on the damn spot, I can tell you for sure.
Well, from my understanding, Cope, the Sheriff's Department just got bombarded with calls from patriots all over the state saying, you will release him. And then my wife and Kit were getting text messages and private messages saying, we're on our way. Hang tight, we're on our way. The Oath Keeper showed up. You know, those two women did an astounding job. They had people on all exits of the federal building watching in case they tried to get me out. Because let me tell you, Cole, the whole time I was cool as an ice cube. You know, it was no big deal. I knew I was within my rights. I knew I hadn't broken any law. But when they put me in that cage inside of a steel room, and they denied me the right to have an attorney, and keep in mind, the whole five, six hours they had me locked up, they never, to this moment still, have read me my Miranda rights. They never Mirandatized me. And they denied me an attorney of any kind. When I was sitting in that cage by myself, I had one thought on my mind. This is going to be an NDAA disappearance. Little old Bosworth is going, poof, and he's going to be gone. And I was sure hoping that I knew those girls as well as I do, that they had somebody on those doors making sure they don't hide me out some back door somewhere and make me disappear.
I tell you what, I love those two girls. They're awesome.
Oh, man.
They are absolutely amazing. They've done a great job. And, boy, you should have been on the internet when this was going on. Those gals were just absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe the amount of work that they put in and the things that they accomplished and organized there in such a short period of time. Now, I tell you, I think when she said, who was it? Maybe I think it was Kit that told me something about your lawyer. Now, I don't know if this was true or not, or if this was just something for the cops' benefit. But you said the lawyer said that there was a firearm involved in that trespassing charge, that it could be up to 10 years, which tells me that he doesn't know the law either. I don't think
exactly.
You're going to get 9 years for trespassing, because the most they could get you for, if you were in the building, was a year. It states
correct.
That clearly in the statute, in the United States Code. So it says you can
exactly.
be fined or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. So I know they're not going to give you 9 years for trespassing. So I don't think he knew the law either. He was trying to say, oh, yeah, well, we can get you off. We'll just get you 10 years. Something sounded a little fishy there to me.
Exactly. And that attorney, he's gone on the wayside. He basically told us that I was out of line, that that's a case he doesn't even want to touch because it's so far over into federal territory that I was lost.
So he's a sissy is what you're telling me, a big boob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so we've since got some other numbers looking for some replacement attorneys and everything. And Cope, the show of support right now is just astounding. I mean, we got people. I literally had three people contact me. Two of them I've never met before say, I've got a sidearm for you to borrow. You are now a member of our family, and we cannot handle the fact that you're out there unarmed and unprotected. Of course, they don't know me, and I had to tell them, trust me, I have sufficient enough firepower. I have a replacement. They might not be Glocks, but I do have a replacement.
Well, heck, if somebody's going to loan you a Glock, though, you would never want to turn it down, though.
Oh, no. if one of them would have offered to loan me a Glock, I probably would have taken it.
Well, God bless them for offering anyway, whatever they were offering. I don't care if they offered a high point.
Exactly. And so, and there's other people contacting us wanting to do some financial support for legal fees if it goes that far. We told them that we're going to put everything basically on hold right now until we actually get a replacement attorney and everything and find out what we're going to do. We know we're going to fight the citation if they keep pushing it. We've been contacted by state representatives and saying that there was a civil violation here, here, and here, and here, and here. You need to fight this. You'll be doing a disjustice to America if you do not fight this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so we've got state representatives behind us on it. I mean, we've taken the internet by storm. InfoWars has already published it. Of course, Kit published it on Patrick Henry Society. We got Daily Paul that's published it. We got the Reagan Wing that's published it. Man, my mind is so full of stuff right now. We got your buddy out of Arizona. Help me with his name. I just forgot it here now, Cope.
Richard Mack?
The Italian guy. Yeah. No, the Italian guy.
Oh, Luca Zana.
Luca Zana, yeah. He's befriended me and wanted to know that my family's great. It's the model citizen, model of the American family, that my children are well trained to handle stressful situations. I mean, he's behind us, and he said he's going to help us in any way. And he wanted me to know if this kicks off, if they don't quit, he's coming. He's bringing his guns, and he's coming. And I had to tell him, well, guess what, Luca? 1 week from tomorrow, we're going back to that federal land, and this time I'm not going to be standing alone. We're bringing a whole bunch of patriots, and we're all armed, and we're going to call the federal government out on it. This is our land. That land is trust land owned by the people. We know the law. We know we're clear of the law of being there. And we didn't come up with this movement. The people did. The people said, you need to be there. You need to put this together because we want to come. And so since the people asked for us to do it, we put it together. And the people said, don't worry, Bosworth. You defended us. You supported us. We're going to go get your guns back. And so we're going back a week from tomorrow to the federal courthouse, to the same place they arrested me, and we're going to put them in their place.
Well, I tell you,
we've
just
got state representatives backing us.
Real quick here, let me, I talked about this last night, but real quick, let me tell people the highlights of this law. It's 18 United States Code, Section 930, very first part, subsection A, says, except as provided in subsection D, which talks about law enforcement and stuff, whoever knowingly possesses or causes to be present a firearm or other dangerous weapon in a federal facility, other than a federal court facility, or attempts to do so, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. Now, if you go on down here a little ways, go down to subsection G1, it says the term federal facility means a building or part thereof owned or leased by the federal government where federal employees are regularly present for the purpose of performing their duties. It does not mean a courtyard. It does not mean a parking lot. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has specifically disallowed parking lots in this definition. And even if it went down to the court facility, it means courtroom, judges' chambers, witness rooms, jury delivery rooms, attorney conference rooms, prisoner holding cells, office of the court clerks, the United States attorney and the United States marshal, probation. But it doesn't say a damn thing, and adjoining corridors of any court of the United States. It doesn't say anything about parking lots or courtyards. So the guy that was citing that very code only knew the title of it. Possession of firearms and dangerous weapons in federal facilities. He had no earthly idea what he was talking about.
Oh, absolutely. He had no earthly idea. And frankly, you know, one of the reasons I knew about it is over 10 years ago, I was actually, when I worked for the Department of Defense, I actually had this argument with the Department of Defense over federal law. And so 10 years ago, I had actually researched this and found out that federal law was word for word of what Washington state law was on it. And so I was highly aware of the exact verbiage of it because I actually took 7 years fighting with the DOD to win my case without ever going to court so they would allow us to have our sidearms on a federal installation. So I had already went through all this, so I knew what I was talking about. Therefore, that was why I had the ability to actually correct his exact verbiage.
Yeah. I had something I was going to say there, and I forgot what it was. I was I was thinking about the same thing happened over in Hoover Dam when I come back over there, and they found out I had a well, I got out and I was wearing a sidearm, and I did the same thing that Maria did, since I had my youngest daughter with me. Instead of fighting it, you know, if I'd been by myself or been anybody else to take care of the truck or whatever, but I went ahead and, you know, they didn't cite me. They just said, you're going to have to leave, or, and I did because of my daughter. But same type of deal there.
Yeah, you definitely, as a parent, you definitely have a responsibility to pick your fights when your children are present, where the children can be harmed or put in danger. And Marie and I had spoke about it before, that she was to do nothing to get herself arrested ever with, when we have children with us, because she's got to go home with those children. She's got to protect those children, because by all means, we never want our children to end up in state custody while we're battling.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, this this whole deal here, you know, I talked last night a little bit about some of the things that's going on, and it seems like they're, number one, right now, they picked you out specifically because of your status in the movement up there. There's no question about that. But it does fall right hand in hand with the latest things they've come out with about domestic or right-wingers being domestic terrorists, and in their words, more dangerous than ISIS, which just blows me away. You know, in our bylaws, in our militia, it says specifically that we are to be of assistance. You know, we want to be on their side, or we want them on our side, more correctly. You know, we want to help them when we can. We are at their beck and call, providing that they recognize our chain of command and that their laws, their orders and requests are constitutional. And if they are, then we are there to do anything for them. I don't care, traffic control, whatever. Anything that we can turn other people loose to go do more important things, we are there to do that. If their requests are constitutional. So that, for some reason, they just don't understand. They don't get it, for some reason, that we want to be on the same side, but you have to play fair. You have to go by the rule book. We have one rule book. It's not a very long book. It's very concise. It has everything in it that we need to know. And the only thing in addition to that that we would want them to do is abide by their oath, which seems to be a little bit of a problem here for some of these folks.
It does. It really does. You know, while they had me in the cage up there, to redirect their questioning, I actually started questioning them about their oath and about their military service. And both of the agents told me that, you know, neither one of them had ever served in the military. And, of course, then I started playing it back on him, and I said, and it doesn't bother you that you swore to an oath, and now you're asking me about my military experience, but yet you're the one standing on the outside of the cage, looking in the cage at somebody that has put his life on the line for your rights, but yet the two of you are standing outside the cage when I have not committed a crime one except for my crime today or yesterday. And this is my only crime, was I was a being an American exercising my American rights. And that's my only crime in their eyes.
You know, they've, by virtue of you being a veteran, particularly a combat veteran, makes you a danger to them. That's, you know, they're trying to take away our gun rights. They're trying to take away our guns. They're trying to take away our freedom. They're trying to take away everything that we hold dear because we're veterans. And,
It in 2009, 2010 when they declared combat armed special forces veterans were possible domestic terrorists?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my son's painting my truck camo.
We used to have a copy of that
document. Can I respond to that statement?
Sure.
Can I actually respond to that statement?
Absolutely.
I was in Iraq in 2003 to 2005 is when I was in Iraq. Halfway through our tour, we heard that we were going to lose our gun rights when we returned home for the fact only because of our training, we showed the ability to kill, and that all veterans was going to lose their gun rights when they returned home. We heard that in the middle of a combat zone. Let me tell you, if most of us could have got our plane tickets, we would have been home that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was back in, you know, somewhere between 2003 and 2005 when they were telling us that in a combat zone. And I told people when I got home, you need to understand what's happening. From the time of hostility starting until now, even today, we can even use today's numbers, from the start of the war and through the series of little wars and skirmishes that we've had up until today, if you take all the combat veterans over the last 12, 13 years, 15 years, and you put them all together, you will have the largest standing army
certainly
to ever stand on the face of the earth.
Absolutely.
And that's why they fear the American veterans, is because just the army that the American veterans make, if they wake up and stand together, is the largest army to ever stand on the face of the earth. That's why they're afraid.
Yep, I agree 100%. So, well, we're entering into a time right now in history when a great many of us have reason to be concerned over what you went through yesterday. And I talked a couple of days ago about this. You know, if you're going to do something, if you're going to go on federal property, or if you're going to go into the legislature chambers like you guys did here a few weeks ago, if you're going to do something like that, it is vitally important that you know the law very, very well, and that you are willing to, that you understand that there is a possibility that you could be incarcerated, that you could actually get something on your record that would prohibit you from even owning guns. There's a lot of risk. You took a lot of risk by doing what you did yesterday, brother. And you came out smelling like a rose, and I knew you would, but I have wondered, I have feared for this ever since I was up there with you, particularly since the legislature thing. I have feared that that something like this would happen to you or Gavin. Of course, it happened to Gavin, you know, not too long after the rally that I was up there for. And he was thrown in jail.
Yes, it did. Yes,
and
it was.
So you know damn well that they're singling you guys out.
Exactly. And, you know, when it comes a time in a person's life, you know, being a father, a husband, or just a patriot, that you've got to draw your line in the sand, but what I tell everybody, everybody's line is in a different place. And you got to understand the consequences of drawing that line. And if you can't live with the consequences of drawing that line, do not draw that line, because you're not doing any good for yourself or anybody else. But by all means, everybody has to draw their own line, wherever it may be. But no matter where you draw that, you got to be fully willing to accept the consequences for making that stand. You know, and that line's different for everybody. To me, it was, I can't let them push anymore. You know, I've got children, and if I die in this movement or I'm incarcerated in these actions, I will know that my children will know that I tried to do something to protect their freedoms, protect their lives and everything. By no means do I expect everybody to do that, and by no means would I suggest everybody do that. Because it's a coin toss. It really is. You know, at some point, the federal government is going to get tired of being pushed around. They're going to get tired of the black eyes and the bloody noses, and they're going to fight back.
Yeah, there's
and
no doubt.
When that happens, you know, they're not going to let us get away with it forever. You know, by all rights, you know, duty bound, we are doing our duty when we do stand our ground. The people need to understand not everybody should be out doing that, you know, not to that degree. Everybody should maybe be standing, but they need to understand there's consequences in what they're doing.
Yeah, and I've told people before that, you know, everybody, as you said, everybody's line in the sand is in a different place. It doesn't mean that anybody is particularly right or wrong. some people have are just simply plumbed a little bit differently than others. Doesn't mean others are wrong. You choose to carry a gun, others don't. It's your decision. You're a big kid now. You put on your big boy panties, and if you want to go out into this world that we live in today without a firearm, then knock yourself out. It's your decision. And if you feel like you're not up to enduring the things that you may encounter by doing what you did yesterday or something similar, I don't hold it against you. It's not, it doesn't mean that you're wrong. Just, like I said, everybody's got to draw their line in the sand and wherever they're comfortable with it. So it's what America's all about.
Exactly. Let me step back a little bit and make this clear to your listeners there, Cope. When we went there to the federal courthouse, we didn't go there as a Second Amendment group looking for to pick a fight with the federal government. That was not the intent at all. We actually were there on invitation from the 10th Amendment Center to support them. They knew that we had the ability to move people and get people activated, so they invited us to join them. We did tell them that, hey, anytime we go to an event like this, we go armed. If they were fine with it, that's how we would show up. They were fine with it. You can see in any of these other stuff that we do, if I think there might be an issue of arrest or anything of that sort, I always take different guns, and I always leave, my sidearm in the car and that's there because I don't want them taking, my self-defense pistol.
Right.
So we usually leave that in the vehicle and everything, and I definitely don't take my Pride and Joy AK-47 because, that's custom. I built that thing from pieces. So just saying, letting your listeners know that we weren't there to pick a fight with the federal government. We were just there to support the 10th Amendment Center. But because of prior things from their perception, they did target me for other activities, civil disobedience, rallies that I've been participating in, all legal, by the way, made me a target, and they so chose to act upon it at that moment. And, they did catch us a little bit by surprise. If we would have known there was going to be something like that, we would have brought a lot more Second Amendment people with us.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, some reason we've got a couple people trying to get on and listen to the show, and they're having trouble.
Guns.
Do what? You still there, Anthony?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I wasn't saying anything. I was listening to you talk.
No, I was just...
would you want me to say something?
No, I just had a couple of guys here trying to get on, and they can't get on. And I checked the link that I sent a guy on the phone, and it didn't work. And when I get on here, it does work. I don't know what's going on.
Ever since we started this, every time we get around and doing these kind of rallies and stuff, within minutes after we start and they identify us by name, we always have connecting problems. We always start dealing with these electronics of having issues of connecting and being able to do this. You can make up your own mind what's going on, but when we returned from Bundy Ranch, anybody I contacted from the Bundy Ranch on my phone,
They
instantly started having issues on their phone. Now, the people that wasn't down there that I never called while I was down there, they could call through to me unabridged. It was just easy. Anybody that I did contact from down there, they couldn't get a hold of me. Their phones would not connect. And, you can come to your own conclusion about why it is.
Yeah.
And during this rally, same thing. Anybody I contacted from the rally or within a day or so of that, having issues with contacting them.
Oh, be darned, that's weird. Well, times are getting interesting here, brother.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's time for people to wake up and pay attention to what's going on around them. And, people need to understand if they don't watch out for their neighbors, the neighbors can't be there for them,
Yeah, that's something we need to expect. And something we did, had a little meeting tonight with the community, letting everybody know, trying to get a general consensus here of what everybody expects when a disaster of some kind happens. And and that's the thing we pushed. You help, you support everybody else and learn to get along and play nice, because we're all going to need each other at some point, desperately, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a shame that even in modern times that we live in now, you can't seem to find very many people that are, you know, constitutional groups. You know, they all support a different constitutional amendment, but they're having a hard time working together on supporting the Bill of Rights just because they happen to support a different amendment. And, you know, these are simple things. What happens when people are starving or need medical attention or lost their home, you know? And you look around and you say, we can't even work together on simple things. What's going to happen when we really need each other, when we got to give up to help our neighbor? You know, right now, you know, I don't have to give up much to help my neighbor. But what's going to happen when someday it comes that when I help my neighbor, I'm actually giving up a lot? You know, and people need to understand that. They need to start building those working relationships now.
Yeah. Yep, I fully agree. And that's what we were trying to work on there. It's become very pressing to me to get the community together here, to get everybody together. I mean, you, me, everybody that's listening out there, except for some of those anonymous that are probably federal agents. But how many anonymous we got now? We got a pile of them in there now. And some of them are legitimate listeners, probably from got the news from Facebook or friends, and some of them other ones are probably not. But they maybe if they listen to the Shooting Bench enough times, they'll learn something and realize that they need to be faithful to that oath that they took. And we'll all get along a whole lot better if they do that.
Exactly. You know, when I left the federal building there, the federal courthouse, I realized that they had kept my constitution, my pocket constitution.
Did they?
And I made a statement.
Study guide.
Yeah, they did. And I made the comment that, hey, they kept my federal constitution, and one of the marshals said, do you want me to go back in and get it? No, why don't you go ahead and let them keep it? They probably need it.
Yeah, hell no. Let them keep it. Let them read it.
Exactly.
Well, I think they can use it.
You know, exactly. But, you know, people need to understand. My father was a very wise man, and he told me that I will never know the America he grew up and loved. You know, and tell you what, as the days go by, I'm learning that he was more correct than probably even he thought.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, there's a lot of I'll call them prophecies, predictions from our elders in various places here that have hit the nail on the head for where we're at right now. No question about it.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you.
Yakima Glock's got a good idea. They should take them a whole packet of those pocket constitutions. You know, you can probably call the Heritage Foundation and have some delivered right to them. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
We ought to try that and see if they do that. They only cost you like 50 cents a piece or something if you order a case of them and have them delivered to that facility. I think that would be great.
Yeah, the problem with that there is, Cope, is they'd see your name on it or something, or my name on it, and they'd take it out in the middle of a field and put some C4 on it and blow it up.
Yeah, probably so, thinking that it was something else. That's probably exactly right.
Yep.
Okay, well, man, I can't thank you enough, brother, for what you've done. That's... That took a lot of huevos, stand out there and do that. And to take it all in stride. And your wife and Kit, I tell you, I love them to death. They were definitely the epitome of what a patriot is supposed to do and who we are. And they did marvelous job.
You know, Cope, I wouldn't trade either one of them for anybody.
No, I tell you, that's some loyal girls right there. Proud of them.
Yes, they are.
Sue says the marshal refused to take the copy the Constitution offered to him. That little prick. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we've had all the fun we can stand. We sure appreciate you coming on here and sharing that with us tonight.
And, I really appreciate it.
I think you're having some connection problems. I think you're having some connection problems there. We didn't hear all of that. Keep us in mind if something comes up and you need to get the word out, you want to get on here again, all you got to do is give me a call, buddy. We'll make sure it happens.
All right, brother. Yeah, I'll keep you advised. And again, thank you and your listeners for the time of being on here and being able to talk to them.
All right. We appreciate it. And tell Kit and B2Bay. Well, they're both on the chat. Well, just let them know that we're sure thankful for they were there for you.
Yes, they were, and anyway, Cope, I'm going to let you go for the evening. God bless, may God protect you, and, we carry on, we take the higher road.
That's right. It's the only way we can win.
Right. Exactly.
Good night, Anthony. Thank you.
All right. Good night, Cope.
Bye-bye. All right. There you have it. There's big news in the internet and in the Patriot world right now is Anthony Bosworth being arrested, what should we say, illegitimately in Spokane yesterday. Obviously the agents there didn't know the law, and so they had to cover their CYA there a little bit because they couldn't just say, oh, we're sorry. We're just going to let you go because we made a mistake. No, they had to give him a citation for failure to comply. It might as well have been littering or loitering or something like that. They just had to do something because they knew they were wrong and they had to save face is exactly what happened there. So anyway. So Chuck, you got any words of wisdom you want to share with us tonight before we get off here?
Nope, I'm totally wisdomed out.
All right. Well, we're going to get up early in the morning. We got a class to do all day tomorrow and all day the next day, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It always is. Extremely educational, critical in this day and time, I think. So we're going to get out of here. Let me find my right button to push here, and we will see you all tomorrow night. We'll be on here just like normal after the class. We may throw in a few words for something that may have happened in the class or whatever, just to keep you abreast of what's had going on there. So.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, wait. I had to stop that. Sue hit the nail on the head there. Sue said, well, he did go to the I Will Not Comply rally, so it makes sense. Sue, you're a genius, honey. I don't know who you are, but you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it. I Will Not Comply. And you got a ticket for it. I love it. Very good. All right, let's do this again.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.